Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Laura Lloyd, and as was just mentioned, this is my colleague Moose Alperin. And we're glad to have the opportunity to talk with you today about the Assessment of Immunization Training Needs for Medical Assistants, which was a collaborative project with the Rollins School of Public Health of Emory University, where we both work, along with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Association for Prevention Training and Research, the Eastern New Mexico University Roswell Division of Health, and the four of us together as partners. Now, we're going to go through these slides as quick as well as the last one, but we did have some handouts here. If you did not get a set of the handouts and you want one, you can leave us your business card. We'll get it to you, or it sounds like they're going to be on the CDC site. We were first approached in September 2007 to work on a project that would examine the immunization training needs for MAs. So why medical assistants? Well, medical assisting profession is one of the nation's fastest growing careers, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And medical assistants in offices perform many different duties, including preparing and administering immunizations. You're probably aware that they have a variety of professional preparation backgrounds, from formal education, in which they have maybe a six-month degree or diploma program, to a two-year associate degree program as well. They are also on the job train only. We are both, Moose and I are both health educators, and so this was really a new world for us, and part of our orientation to the world of medical assistance and immunization was understanding this alphabet soup. And what we realized is that there's accrediting organizations for educational preparation programs like KHEP and ABHES. These are the organizations that accredit the degree and diploma programs. There are organizations that administer the exams and professional organizations for medical assistants. So somebody might be a CMA or an RMA, and they're members of the American Association of Medical Assistants. There are these OJTs. Then there are also, as we got further into our research, we realized that there were state certifications. Like in California, there's a California Certified Medical Assistant, and then there's other national accreditations and registered certifications. Now, the purpose of our project, we were asked to provide data on the immunization-related training needs of current and future medical assistants and on the existence of training and education materials targeting the medical assistant profession. This presentation today is focused on the first of these purposes. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the survey instrument. This was a web-based survey that was put on SurveyMonkey. It had six sections with 25 questions. Most of those questions were closed-end questions, but we did have a few open-ended follow-up questions. The survey, right at the beginning of the survey, we defined key terms that would be found throughout the survey, such as those dealing with vaccination, those dealing with immunization, immunization services, and training. We wanted to make sure that there was a uniform understanding of these terms we were going to use. And then the six sections of the survey are as follows, having to do with your immunization duties, your training history, past immunization trainings, future immunization trainings, the motivators and barriers to training, and questions about you. The survey did go through a review by our project team members and experts in the area of immunizations at CDC, as well as experts in needs assessment and questionnaire development at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory. The survey was also pilot tested by CMAs, RMAs, and medical assisting students at Eastern New Mexico University. Now let me tell you a little bit about the methodology we devised to inform MAs about the survey. We didn't have enough money to target all the states, so what we decided is that we would develop a methodology that would allow us to effectively reach the most MAs and those types of MAs, such as those OJTs, that we knew the least about. We ended up selecting 24 states based on an MA presence variable that we created and made sure that we had geographic distribution throughout the U.S. We were particularly interested in learning more about OJTs, and we postulated that there may be more OJT medical assistants in rural areas, and that going through physicians' offices may be one of the few direct lines to reach them. So we sent postcards to physicians' offices in the rural areas of four of our 24 selected states and asked the office manager or physician to give the survey information to any medical assistants practicing in their office. This is the final list of the 24 targeted states. The states that have the red asterisks are those four states in which we really specifically targeted the rural physicians' offices in those states. And the black lines just show you how we divided the country and got geographic representation. This is the bright yellow postcard that we sent to the MAs. And the address label sign encouraged the person who handled the mail, because we knew they weren't always the MA in the office, to direct the postcard onto any and all medical assistants in the office. And there was a link to the survey on the postcard. The postcard was sent, in the 24 targeted states, the postcard was sent to AAMA members, both active and associate members, and to these rural physicians' offices in those four targeted rural states. An email was also sent to these organizations and chapters and programs in those 24 states, and basically the email asked them to forward that survey link onto medical assistants that they had contact with or put it on their websites. We took advantage of some no-cost ways of promoting the survey throughout the entire nation. For instance, an email was sent to the AAMA State Society President and President-elects, to some professional associations, to chapter executives with the American Academy of Pediatrics. We had an article included, or a link included, on the Immunization Action Coalition newsletter, and then there were announcements. Yes, thank you. There were also announcements on national websites, including the AAMA, the Association for Prevention, Teaching, and Research, and the CDC Vaccine and Immunizations website. Here are screenshots of the announcements that we included on the websites. And at this point, I'm going to ask Moose to tell you a little bit about the survey results.
So I am going to tell you a little bit about our findings. We had just under 3,000 people that started the survey, but then you got removed for several reasons. First, you weren't a medical assistant, so you got tossed out of the group. We then asked whether people worked in immunization services. If you answered no, you got tossed out. And then we had people that answered no other questions on the survey, so we tossed those folks out. So we ended up with our final group of respondents was 1,977 individuals. In terms of who were those 1,977 individuals, the average age was 38 years of age, 97% of them were female, the average number of years they worked as a medical assistant was 9 years. We actually had respondents from 49 states plus the District of Columbia and Guam. We were only missing North Dakota, because if you recall from what Laura just said, we were targeting 24 states, but we took advantage of some opportunities that were national to let folks know. But when you looked at our respondents, 82% of the respondents were from our 24 targeted states, and then 72% were from urban or suburban areas. In terms of education to become a medical assistant, over half indicated they had graduated from a medical assistant program and were a CMA or a certified medical assistant. A quarter of them had graduated from a medical assisting program but were neither a certified medical assistant or a registered medical assistant. 10% had graduated from a medical assistant program and were an RMA or a registered medical assistant, and then 8% indicated they were on the job trained. The most common settings where the respondents worked were physicians' offices or community health centers. And for those who worked in a physician's office, the most common types of offices were family practice offices or pediatric offices. And 64% of the respondents indicated that their setting was enrolled as a VFC provider. When we asked the different kinds of immunizations that were given in their setting, it was really pretty evenly split among adolescent, childhood, and adult immunizations. I do for a moment want to mention that 2% of other. We had a blank for people to indicate the other immunizations that were given in their setting, and I want to point out that we asked about immunizations, and some of the things that were indicated in that other blank were things like allergy shots, antibiotics, vitamin B12. So we thought that the misinterpretation of just the term immunization ended up being sort of an interesting finding in and of itself and something we had not necessarily expected to see. In terms of immunization duties, we gave people a long list of different immunization tasks and asked how often they performed those different tasks. And the immunization tasks that were performed often included things like record keeping and documentation, administering vaccines, storage and handling, education and screening of patients. The immunization tasks that were infrequently performed were things like coding and billing of immunization services and assessing immunization rates. Reasons why respondents participated in trainings included really three big things. When a doctor or other medical staff in their office offered training, when there was a change in immunization recommendations, or when a new vaccine was licensed. We asked about past immunization trainings, and the majority of past immunization trainings had been provided as an in-service within the respondent's physical office. The majority of those trainings had been sponsored by in-house staff or vaccine manufacturers or vaccine reps. When respondents were asked how they update their knowledge, and we made a distinction between training and updating. An update was you just needed to quickly go look for some information. It wasn't sort of a full-blown kind of in-depth training. Once again, in-house staff and vaccine manufacturers were the sources, as well as folks going to, as well as folks going to CDC and using CDC as a place to update their information. Well, not only did we ask about the past immunization trainings, we also asked about future. For future trainings, the top training topics included the things you see here on this list: adverse reactions or side effects, you know, education, administering vaccines, risk communication, record keeping, immunization schedule, so on and so forth. Y'all can see the list that is there. Preferred methods of how folks wanted to receive trainings were by an in-service. It was either an in-service by staff in their office or an in-service by another lecturer that came in. The methods that were not preferred were things that involved technology, satellite broadcasts or webcasts, maybe an audio recording. And then in terms of specific educational strategies that might be used as part of the training, the preferred strategies included things that were case-based, case studies, or using problem-based learning. We also asked about motivators and barriers to training. And the top motivators ended up being, you know, the fact that they could learn something new or get updated information. It was a requirement for their job. Things that ended up being the barriers were it was tough to find time in the work schedule to participate in training, or people weren't even aware of trainings that were available. And then finally, the cost of a training was also one of the barriers that we saw. Now, you know, one of the things we also wanted to do is we figured, you know, this is a training needs assessment, and presumably we're, you know, hopefully something happens now that we sort of have a feel for the needs assessment. And we want to know, how is it best to communicate with medical assistants? You learned from Laura that it's a group of folks that come to the profession from many different ways, and we found that it was really tough in a lot of ways to figure out, how do you go find these folks, and how can we then effectively communicate with these folks? So we asked them, well, what's the best way to tell you about future trainings? And email communications or direct mailings through the U.S. Postal System were the top answers. There were a small percentage of folks who said, hey, you should put an announcement on a website. And for the people that said, hey, a website is a really good way to communicate with us, the preferred website for these kinds of announcements were either the State Immunization Registry website or the CDC website. So, recommendations. After we called through all the data, we came up with a list of recommendations, and we divided them into three categories: advocacy, communication, and training. And the recommendations are really geared towards agencies and individuals who work with medical assistants. In terms of advocacy, the recommendations were first and foremost to advocate for professional preparatory standards for medical assistants. Secondly, to partner with medical and nursing associations to facilitate communications with MAs for a couple of reasons: to advocate for the ongoing need for immunization training and to just encourage recognition of the medical assisting profession. We also had advocate for a national mechanism, perhaps a registry, to collect contact information for MAs regardless of what education they might have had coming to the profession or regardless of a specific professional organization or association that they might belong to. And then finally, in terms of advocacy, was advocate for uniform regulation of the medical assistant profession. For communication, recommendations here included announce training availability and updated information via email, direct mail, and key websites. That's what the medical assistants in the survey that responded, you know, told us. To communicate training opportunities to worksite supervisors. One of the things, you know, we had these 25 questions on the survey. Most were closed-ended, as Laura said. We had some open-ended answers as well, and it was very clear reading through all of the open-ended answers and looking at the data, the other data as well. Worksite supervisors are a gatekeeper, and it's important to keep those folks in the loop and let them help you reach the medical assistants. We also recommended communicating to those worksite supervisors the importance of ongoing updates and immunization trainings for medical assistants, that they really need to be included in training opportunities that occur. And then finally, we had 10 recommendations related to training. The first was to focus immunization-related trainings on a whole host of topics, which you see on this list here. They're the topics that I had a few slides ago, where medical assistants said it was important to have training in these areas. Recommended developing case studies and problem learning activities, developing short modular training units that incorporate case studies and problem-based learning. And one of the barriers was finding time to participate in trainings and being able to perhaps participate in trainings in their own work setting. And perhaps by having these short modular trainings, that might help facilitate medical assistants actually participating in trainings. Delivering trainings for medical assistants as in-services, whether it's an in-service by staff that work at that office or by some other lecturer, either one, but have it be an in-service. Utilize a train-the-trainer methodology that incorporates these modular units and can really support the worksite supervisors as they train medical assistants. Partner with the VFC program to facilitate the development and dissemination of training opportunities for medical assistants that are in those particular settings, as well as offer continuing education units as an incentive for medical assistants, particularly the certified medical assistants and the registered medical assistants. And then finally, our last couple of recommendations were to explore strategies to offer either no-cost or low-cost training to medical assistants by collaborating with other agencies. You know, market available continuing education offerings to medical assistants and their supervisors, and clarify to people that, you know what, this is one of the benefits. This is, you know, maybe this will be something that'll encourage you to do training. You can get some continuing ed training specifically for the CMAs and the RMAs. And then finally, to develop immunization-related training materials at an instructional level that is appropriate for medical assistants who are diversely trained and come to the profession from many different places. In closing, we would like to acknowledge our project partners, and Donna Page from the Association for Prevention, Teaching, and Research is actually about five rows back there, and Betty Pollard from CDC is sitting next to her, but these are all of our collaborators and partners, and we're just very appreciative of their involvement in this project. And then finally, our contact information. Thank you.
Thank you to Laura and Moose again for a very great presentation. At this time, we'll open up for questions. At the very end, we'll still get out on time. I do have some housekeeping announcements, so please stick around for some important announcements regarding tomorrow. So we can have our first question.
Or you can all eat dinner.
Okay. I have a comment and a question.
Okay,
my comment is I do training for MAs. I've linked with some of the local schools in our area, and they're very receptive to having MA training. In fact, one particular institute has me going every semester to educate their MAs on immunization administration and VPDs. So it's a
That's
very
terrific.
Positive thing.
That's terrific.
It works very well. And, you know, as a nurse, I never got any specific immunization training, so I'm trying to also target, you know, LVN students, RN students, and all of those entities. But my question is on, I know you said there were some closed-ended questions. Were VFC in-services one of the options on those as to where they were receiving their training or past training?
We did not specify that. We had in-service, but we didn't specify the various kinds of in-services.
Okay, I was wondering how much they're getting from VFC in-services in particular. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we gave them several possible ideas for, you know, it might be a public health department nurse who came in and did training or a pharmaceutical rep, but we didn't specify VFC.
Where did public health come in? I don't remember.
In that question where you were asking as one of the options for an in-service training, for instance, we suggested, you know, did you have an external person coming in to provide your training, such as some public health departments might have nurses or others who are trained to provide.
Oh, so various options were listed on that.
Right.
One, yeah,
there was the opportunity for them to say it was an in-service by health department,
by
it was
person.
An in-service by local nursing school, it was an in-service by VOTAC. It was... All such as.
Right, thank you.
Absolutely.
I have a question for the first presenter. One of your slides showed giving 3 IM injections in one leg of an infant. Is that common practice? I always learned that there was just 2 per leg.
Well, I think you're referring to that chart that was Michigan had developed, and that CDC publishes.
And I'm from Michigan, so.
Oh, well.
I honestly, the one I've seen goes 2 and 2.
Yeah.
And then you use the arms, and I always was taught never 3, but I really wonder, has that changed?
Okay. Well, the way I understand too, it's as long as you've separated them by an inch, you could give.
You can give
multiple.
3.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. 3 separate injections, not.
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Poor kid. I have a quick comment. I'm from one of those states that you studied. Is there a way that we could get the information about our state? I'm from Michigan too.
What I would actually do is refer you to CDC and to Betty and to Donna in terms of data. We've now handed it off to them, and what I would do is communicate with them about whether that's a possibility or not. We didn't split things by states, by individual states, but I'm sure we can figure out whether that's possible or not.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one last question, and then I'll do the announcements.
In our state, I'm from Nevada, and it seems like our MA turnover rate is really high, and I'm wondering if that's kind of consensus. And if there's any data in your survey that, I mean, when MAs leave a doctor's office, are they likely to stay in MA and work in another pediatrician's office, or are they likely to go get a job at a bank?
I don't know.
Seems like the best place to train them would be within their curriculum program or something, you know, to offer do an immunization specific 2-hour thing or something, so that hopefully they could take that wherever they move.
We did hear at the round table we had earlier that was an issue, the turnover rate of MAs. And I know that a lot of the MAs taking our survey indicated that they, you know, we asked when was the last time you got trained, or I can't remember exact wording of the question, but they would say the last, you know, I got trained when I was first hired, and that's the last time I was trained 6 years ago, or whenever that was.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Leslie Hayden. I'm with the California Department of Public Health, and I think most we've talked on the phone before. We have developed immunization training skills for medical assistants, and I'm giving a presentation about that Thursday morning at 10:30, but for anybody who's interested, it's easyiz.org.
We've heard wonderful things.
Great.
That's great.
Thank you.